Podcast City Network. The Everett Lee Show.
Welcome everyone to the Everett Lee Show. I'm the Everett Lee. Welcome to the first episode of 2022. This is a brand new start for 2022. 2021 was great. I put out quite a bit of content. Well, not exactly. I put out not as much as I did the previous year in 2020, but this year is going to be a lot different because I don't have that much distractions that I had in 2021. And 2022, you're going to get more content and different types of guests on the podcast for this year. One of the focuses that, if you read the post I put out there for the end of 2021, talking about what direction and what I had in store for 2022, and that is to focus with getting guests on, discussing mental health, especially in the world of the independent wrestling scene and even in independent film, because mental health is one of those issues that I feel that it don't get addressed enough. And I feel that it needs to get addressed because everyone has gone through something. I went through an ordeal of mental health in 2021. I mean, I was still grieving over the loss of my best friend, and I lost my mother. She passed away a few months before the end of 2021, and that really did mentally mess with me, having both of those happen with the loss of my best friend at the end of 2020 and going into 2021 and even losing my mother. So it affected me, and also hearing stories and seeing what was happening with people that I know and friends and family dealing with mental health. And I feel that it needs to be addressed. Maybe someone can share a story and explain how they got through something to help someone. Talking about different direction. Well, this is definitely going to be an interesting episode to kick off 2022. This was recorded just at the end of 2021. I have Michelle Lopez. Michelle Lopez is a certified sex therapist. She has a podcast called the Mindful Sexuality Podcast. She's already released, at the time this comes out, 3 episodes. And her introduction episode on her podcast, and even her second and third episode, is something you really would like to hear, because she's great. She's great with getting out there and jumping into the podcast. And I suggest that everyone heads over and listens to her podcast over on Podcast City Network, over on podcastcity.net. List of shows on the front page there, and you'll see hers right there, the Mindful Sexuality Podcast. So I suggest that you click on that and listen to it, and you may walk away with something. I certainly did, especially after having the conversation with Michelle. We discussed a lot of things. We threw some statistic numbers in there discussing about relationships, singles, and I shared a couple of stories and some great conversation with her. Here's my guest, Michelle Lopez. I'm going to welcome to the podcast, Michelle Lopez. How you doing, Michelle?
I am doing really, really great. Thank you for having me. This is actually really exciting.
It is. So this is your first podcast you've been on as a guest, huh?
As a guest, this is my first podcast attempt, like even the mindful sexuality thing. I've never done anything like that before, so I'm in uncharted waters.
You are. And after listening to the introduction in the second episode, you're swimming pretty good.
I appreciate that feedback. It's you know what you guys do isn't easy. It's tough to be informed and entertaining and engaging, and it's a nice combination to once you find your groove to keep that.
It is. As soon as you find your groove, you just go with it, and just getting feedback from listeners and just people, that's a plus right there, because you're connecting with people that listen to your podcast. And I feel that with a lot of podcasts out there, because it's such a big market, that a lot of podcasts don't make it because they don't find that niche or groove, or they fall into that category of a podcast doing something that everyone's been doing. They fall into that category there and they get lost in the shuffle and they don't stand out like they do. But with your show, it's something different that I've not heard before of all the podcasts I listen to, because I go through and I listen to a lot of podcasts for Podcast City Network. And within the first 30 seconds, I can tell you, I'll message Chris. I'm like, no good. And after that 30 seconds, if you catch my attention, I'm going to be listening to it. With your first episode, when Chris told me, he's like, you got to listen to it. So I listened to it. Within the first 30 seconds, I was caught. I'm like, she has something here. And I wanted to hear more. And then I listened to your second episode, which was really great, how you mixed it up, threw in some numbers, threw in some statistics, and threw in just, it was a great listen, and it kept my attention the whole time.
I really wish I could take credit, but it just turns out sex and sexuality are just some of the most like interesting topics for people. And I know that there are a lot of shows out there that treat with that topic. So if there's any way that I can make any information that I have to provide stand out, then I'm all about that. So I appreciate that feedback.
Most definitely. To me, when you hear the word sex, it's almost taboo, ain't it? It's like, oh no, that's bad.
No, you're absolutely right. I was watching a Netflix show with my daughter, and they were talking about Times Square during the 1970s and how tawdry and seedy and sex not being talked about, and that provided room for all of these other negative mob influences to come in and really take over. And you know, when you push something down and make it dirty, it makes it like almost untouchable. And it makes it something that you don't talk about. And then when it's something as important as what happens between human beings every day, how can sex be dirty? How can sex be bad?
You're right.
Shift the conversation to consider sex as being something that is completely natural and completely normal. And if it falls off the rails, just being able to feel comfortable enough about having that conversation to get back on track.
Absolutely. When it's brought up, and you know how you get people that are not that open about when it's brought up, come on, you know, try to approach it from different perspective. You get this look from people, which I've had it before. They're like, what are you talking about? You know, you kind of feel embarrassed by it though, but then when you stand firm on what, you know, what you have to say, like with an opinion about it, that all changes.
Yeah. And that's like one of the look, like you said, the look that you mentioned, and the kind of the eyebrow arch when I tell people that I'm a sex therapist, and they get kind of quiet and they're like, oh, that's cool. And then there's a pause and they go, what does a sex therapist do? And it's really funny because, you know, a sex therapist is no different than any other therapist. It's just, for some reason, we're just a lot more comfortable talking about sex. We're really not that special.
Because you're certified, correct?
Yes, I'm certified. Florida is interesting in being the only state in the country that requires certification for a sex therapist. I don't know if that's because of title protection or because they just want to make sure that whoever tries to deal with these particular topics is trained specifically, because this can go anywhere from sexual dysfunction to completing like what we call a psychosexual history for someone who may be in trouble with the law, and may need to be presenting in court about, you know, the chances for them to re-offend, quote unquote. And so being very knowledgeable and is something that's very important in these roles. I've been interested in sex and sexuality since I was a kid. I grew up in Miami. I saw it. I heard it all. And I was always so confused being raised in a Catholic family. I'm like, why does no one talk about this? Like, why is this so such a bad thing?
Right.
And so I ended up being like a lot of kids. Like, I ended up having to look up stuff on my own and having to learn some things the hard way. And I personally am now of the opinion where I'm like, can I help save people from that pain and that misery of having to learn things the hard way? If we can just start the conversation ahead of time.
When you said Miami there is hot, seems like anybody and everybody is in Miami. It's one of those cities there, and they have a scene there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You get the nude beaches, you have all of the clubs, you have, you know, these music videos and things, you know, all these musicians come down and there's all these beautiful women and these sexy men. And it's very much a lifestyle, a portrayal of just beauty and sex and hot. Like you said, like, it's just hot down there, you know, literally and figuratively. It's difficult to grow up in those kinds of surroundings and ignore that is a part of life. Mm-hmm. And so when I first decided that I wanted to be a therapist, I knew I wanted to be a sex-informed therapist, because there were so many therapists going into the field and they all wanted to talk about attachment, and they wanted to talk about emotional wounds, but no one was really comfortable talking about this really formative part of people's lives. You know, when did you trust someone with your body? When did you trust yourself with your body? When did you become aware of your body? How did you feel about that? And that's a lot of questions that people even deal with when they're no longer even teenagers. They're in their 40s and 50s, and they're starting to ask themselves those questions now.
Right. With different types of therapy, because like you mentioned, or like attachment stuff, what other type of topics and areas that therapists do cover?
Well, I'll go ahead. I'm a social worker. So I went to Florida State. I graduated from their School of Social Work. And the reason I chose social work is because social work can go into anything. They do geriatrics, children, severe mental health, like Bacharach's, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety. You also work in the criminal justice system. You can work in adoption. We have our hands in many, many, many pies, so to speak. Right. And there are so many ways of working with people out there. But for social workers, we work within this whole person ideal, that we look at everything. We look at your medical, we look at your physical, your spiritual, we look at all domains of your life to get a better idea of who you are, who you want to be, and what it's going to take to change, to make the kind of change that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask like what else do therapists do, we do a lot.
I didn't realize that. I do have like a lot of things to ask here and there throughout this. You do couples, right? You're pretty much, you help couples relationships, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was gathering notes and stuff with this pandemic that happened last year. And it pretty much, it changed a lot of things, and it changed a lot of ways how people interact with each other. How have you seen that happen with a lot of people that you've talked to? How have you seen that affect them?
Oh, the pandemic was definitely the curveball for a lot of people. They, initially it was all, haha, we can stay home and we're going to work from home and it's going to be fantastic. And then people started realizing, oh, I am now sharing my physical space and my workspace and my alone time with the same people every day for long extended periods of time. I'm not getting my creative outlets. I'm not getting my individual time to really focus on me. And that built up so much resentment, that built up so much pressure of like, oh, I now need to change how I talk to people. I now need to change how I engage with my partner. Or I'm still not going to talk to my partner. And now I'm in a house with someone 24 hours a day and I'm still not talking to them, kind of dynamic. And it really brought to the surface to for people like, okay, we've been so busy with everything else in our lives, and now that everything else has been put on hold, we are now coming to realize, oh, this is wrong, this is broken. We can no longer ignore this. And so it resulted in a lot of conversations. And I think what some of my colleagues have realized that they had a lot more people reach out to them for couples work in the last year.
One thing I've noticed is how people going out and gathering and be like socially going out to a place to meet and to like meet people, that pretty much changed, don't you think? I'm sure the dating scene pretty much changed, since last year.
Oh, you're not wrong about that at all. And actually, to go back a little further, I don't know if you remember that scene from Hot Tub Time Machine, where the one of the characters meets a girl and he's like, "How do I get in touch with you?" Like, and he's like, "Do you have like a Facebook account or something that I can contact you?" And she just says, "Come find me." And he goes, "That sounds exhausting." And it really hit home how much the expectation or the anticipation for the effort that it takes to put in a lot of work to get to know somebody has changed over the last year. And I think over the last couple of years, Facebook really became a big part of that. Even before that, you had Match.com, Cupid, all those dating websites that really made it easier to connect with someone without having to put yourself out there physically, to introduce yourself to someone like people used to have to. And so when the pandemic hit and all of a sudden clubs were closed, bars were closed, and people really weren't comfortable even meeting off of these dating websites, like a lot of the stuff really transitioned online. And this even created more opportunities for long distance relationships, where that wasn't the case before. Since people were more focused online, they got to know people way across the country. So the pandemic really changed a lot. Sorry, excuse me. It really changed a lot of people's love lives. And I think that would have happened anyway, but the pandemic really accelerated it. Because now people they look at Tinder, they look at Bumble, they look at they I don't it's really rare for me to meet a couple who says, yeah, we just met through a friend, we met through we were, we both joined this like trivia league, and that's how we got to know each other. Those stories get fewer and far between.
You mentioned dating sites. I have to share a quick story with you with a friend of mine. When I lived in Tennessee, I lived with my best friend's older brother. I lived with him probably for about 2 or 3 months, and then I ended up like moving back home and staying with my dad. But during that time, I had a great time. I mean, I was 20, 22. I was 22 at the time. And it was in the early 2000s, and not to give away my age here, but he was a player. My friend was a player. He had the confidence where we'd go out to the mall and he would see a group of girls together and he would single one out and walk straight into that group, introduce himself to everybody and start talking to them all. But then he would keep, when he would talk, he would do eye to eye direct contact for the one he was wanting. And then he ended up getting their number and just, it's like, how do you do that? And he had the confidence. He would do that. It just amazed me. We'd just sit there and just watch him. We'd take bets and be like, $20, you can't get that girl's number, you know, because he would do it. And it just amazed me. But he met this girl online. It was back during AOL days, America Online. And yeah, he was talking with her and she was sending pictures and everything. She lived in Georgia, Savannah, Georgia. So we got this crazy idea. He talked me into it. Go down and meet her. So we got up like at 5 o'clock in the morning. We got down to Savannah that afternoon. And she wasn't there at her house, though, but she left some stuff and she left some pictures. And come to find out, that wasn't her on the pictures. Yeah. He got catfished. Yeah. And we spent the day in Savannah getting lost. And by that evening, I was like, dude, let's just go home. I'm tired. So he printed out directions how to get there, but he forgot to print directions out how to get back. It was a nightmare. And it was like, okay, we went south. Okay, we got to go north. We went west. We'll have to go east this time. So we just flipped everything around. And we made it back like 24 hours from the time we left. And I said, never again I will ever go out to Savannah again because of that experience. But he got catfished. And then after that, it just like having that experience back then about like dating sites and stuff. I was like, yeah, I would never want to do that again, but times have changed, I guess, apparently.
Yeah. I used to participate in a group of divorced women, and they were like, oh, I finally feel like I'm ready to get back out there, ready to give it another try. And then they'll come back and they'll be like, is this really what it's like? Is this like, and they'll post screenshots of like conversations where it's like, I am flabbergasted. I am like, I'm a combination of offended and astounded at how these conversations are going with people these days. And it's a very jarring experience.
Yeah. I feel that people's attention span is not like it used to be. Have you noticed that?
Oh yeah. And you get all kinds of distractions. You get what is it called? The paradox of choice, right? You swipe right on all of these pictures and one person replies yes, and you get into a conversation with them, but then here comes another person. They've also swiped right on you, and now they want to start a conversation with you. And, you know, before, like, if you would rewind 20, 30 years ago, carrying on two conversations with two individuals, I mean, I probably would have looked at that like cheating. Like, that was a little dishonest, but it's the norm now. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do people navigate that? How do people become okay with that, especially if they're of the older generation and they're like, I'm actually not okay with this, but that just seems to be what everyone's doing.
Yeah, I was talking with you the other day before we started, you know, recording tonight with this with the podcast. I told you, I said, it's to me, looking like outside into how everything is nowadays, I would be terrified to go out there and try to get a date if I was single.
I can't disagree with you. I also would not like to be in the dating scene right now, just out of preference. Like, it's exhausting. It is genuinely exhausting. I am very happy with the partner that I have now. So that's another reason why I'm not looking forward to going back into the dating scene. But if for any reason that didn't work out and I had to find myself alone, I might just entertain the idea of being single for a while and just being okay with that instead of jumping into the circus of dating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like with singles, like people being singles, I pulled up some statistics here, and it's like dating and marriage statistics. And I was going through reading this, and I was like, wow, that's interesting, because a lot of this stuff seems really interesting to see how what's happening here with statistic wise. I'm going to mention this right here. It says that San Francisco has the highest rated single males in the country, but Memphis, Tennessee has the highest rated single females.
Huh. I wonder why that is. I'd imagine San Francisco has, I mean, I'm sure they're accounting for population density and all of that fun stuff. But I would imagine San Francisco has a lot more of the LGBTQ scene, where people define themselves and report themselves a little differently than maybe individuals in Memphis. So it's really hard. It's almost like when you compare cities, mm-hmm. like let's say like Miami to Memphis, or Miami to, let's say, Biloxi, Mississippi. It's like apples and oranges almost.
Right.
You really don't know what they're talking about when they have those statistics. I'd be interested in seeing the article to see what it is that they say.
I'll email it to you there and let you take a look at it, because it's pretty interesting reading. It's just like, wow, you know, I like reading about, you know, different statistics and stuff and everything. I was like looking at this one here. It said if you get married or move in with someone at the age of 18, then there's a 60% chance you'll divorce or break up.
I'm kind of curious. I could see where that would come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting married, getting into a significant relationship at a young age, you tend to grow into different people. And if you don't have a lot of experience in having conversations about, hey, this has changed, when we talk about this, a lot more people look at that as an irreconcilable difference, and they think, well, divorce is our only option. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're accurate, sometimes they're right, but other people discover ways of being able to stay together even though they're not the people they were when they first got together.
With me and my wife, we got married in 2012. Next year we'll be celebrating our 10-year anniversary, but we've been together for 11 years. But married for 10, together for 11. And back before we got married, I had her stay with me for about a week. Almost a couple weeks with me to see if we can make it, you know, if we could like actually stand each other. And she stayed with me for a week. And at that time I had my mom's house, and she moved in and did the whole thing for a week. And then pretty much after that, she never did leave me. We pretty much were inseparable. That was it there.
You guys found a good match. I mean, I'd like to also say that the fun part of this day and age is that words don't mean what they used to mean like 30, 40, 50 years ago. Like when you were engaged, you told somebody you were engaged, and the assumption is at some point you were going to get married. And then now people are content to be engaged and stay engaged. Like, yeah. They're like, no, why should we get married? Like, we're committed to each other, and there's no reason to put it down on paper. We're fine the way we are. And that's people taking more of a proactive role in defining, this is what's right for me. It might not have been right for my mom or for my grandma, but it's right for me. And if it doesn't make sense to anyone else, they're really doesn't faze me.
Right. Do you think a lot of people have a problem with committing? you know, committing to that person, because I had a friend who had a problem with committing because he would get with someone and he'd date them there for a while. And then it's like for him is by chance he would run into someone and start dating. But when you start dating someone, all of a sudden he started to him, he'd see all these potentials. And he's like, I'm in a relationship right now. You know, I'm dating someone and now all these potentials, and it drives them crazy. I mean, do you think committing, that's one of the biggest problems there with a relationship, having one commit to another?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by commitment. I mean, for some people, commitment is like when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to roll over in my bed and you're going to be there every day. And if I have a problem, I know that if I call you, you're going to pick up and you're going to help me figure it out. And then for other people, it's like, I don't need you here all the time. I just need you here some of the time because I'm okay with just, you know, having my own space. And I really don't need that level of involvement from you. And so every person is going to come into a relationship with a different level of need for security. And so that question that you ask is, do people have a problem with commitment? I don't think people have a problem with commitment. I think people have a problem agreeing what commitment is and how it can shift and change and how those needs can shift and change over time.
Okay. I never looked at it that way.
It's really just letting, like, that's the one thing I love about being a therapist is, I think I was in a training a few months ago, and one of our trainers said, you should always be knowledgeable about everything because you don't want someone to come into your office and have to explain to you what they mean when they say XYZ word. And I'm like, okay, well, number one, that's impossible. How can I be knowledgeable about everything? I can't anticipate people's needs from me. And also, I don't want to assume what someone means when they use a particular word. I need to understand what it means for them. And that includes all of these relationship words, these words of commitment and love and forever. And like, well, forever doesn't mean what it used to.
Mm-hmm. Had a childhood friend. She got married and she thought she found the one, and he cheated on her and pretty much made it to where she was like, to hell with men. So she got interested in women. And then that went on for a while. And then finally she met a guy and got married and remarried again. And then I guess that didn't work out. And then divorced and then got married again. And that pretty much, she's been with them ever since and stuff. And I think that people should at least, you know, try to, you know, go out and before they, you know, settle with someone, go out and see and, you know, see what you like and what you don't like. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm in awe of the people who meet their loves in, you know, grade school, and they know that person is going to be their forever love, and they stay together for 60, 70 years, because I have had those individuals in my office as well. And it's the dynamic is amazing, you know, how certain and sure they are about their partner. And then I've also had people who have basically been these relationship wing walkers, like just basically going from person to person to person. And then that's okay for them too, until they find the one person that they feel like they're the best with at that moment. Mm-hmm. And it's always like you go from this distinction of, I'm sure that this is the person that I want to be with forever. And now you have this other person that's like, I'm sure that this is the person that I want to be with for the foreseeable future. And we will reassess and renegotiate at the appropriate times. It's like, okay.
Nice. One thing you mentioned earlier about, you were watching something about the with your daughter about the 70s there. The 60s. For some reason, I'm drawn into the 60s, like the Woodstock era and stuff, because I think it has to do with like what was going on at that time. Because someone asked me a while back ago, they said, what era of music do you like and like culture? And I said the late 60s, because you had the psychedelic rock era going on. You had some like new music that you've not heard of. People were experimenting with LSD, acid, and, you know, like marijuana. And it was just like, you know, love and free and stuff. And of course, you know, you had like, you know, the Vietnam War going on and Woodstock happening and people protesting against that. But it was like free love and everything. And it's like if I had a chance to like travel back in time, I think I would go visit the 60s and go to Woodstock just to, you know, just enjoy that era, because it just seems so just fascinating to me, you know?
No, for sure. I actually, my first major in undergrad was a history major with a focus on environmental activism. Uh-huh. Which is a far cry from sex therapy, if there is ever anything. And I distinctly remember doing the history of environmental activism and wondering why this came to such a head in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And what I remember reading was that this was the generation that came out of the men and women that fought in World War II. And they went across the world and they saw fascism and they saw totalitarianism and they came back and they taught their kids, like, you do you. You don't just do stuff that the government tells you to do. Don't just, you know, you have to fight for freedom and you have to fight for this. And there was a complete idealism shift. And so there was a lot more of this subversive culture shift and not being so tied to a straight and narrow path. And also, I think when we talk about sex during the 60s, there was also this freedom because of contraception and because of more empowerment of being able to control your sexuality. Conversations were shifting. We were starting to use different verbiage. Sex wasn't just for having kids. Now you could have sex because it just felt good. And it really became this sexual revolution for a lot of different groups of people, not just women, but, you know, African Americans, for the LGBT community. And it really started to emerge a lot of movements during that time, this counterculture that definitely started to take shape during that time. So I agree with you completely that the 60s were the beginning of a lot.
Yes. Yes, because I mean, if you look into the 70s too, after the 60s there, with the 70s and stuff and how the style and everything changed and stuff, it's like, looking back at stuff from the 70s too, it's like the women, how they dressed and stuff. And I say to myself, I'm like, oh God, I was like, the women were sexy in the 70s too, man. I mean, just like how they, you know, wear the bell-bottom pants and wear the tight shirts. It's just, it was neat just to see that, you know? I mean,
men too. I mean, men started wearing their hair longer. They started to not, you know, feel like they needed to be, you know, wearing suits and ties all the time. They started wearing longer, more flowy shirts. And so I feel like there was a shift towards more of this, you know, being able to wear clothes that was not as associated with the gender norms during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even in the 80s, man, just the style in the 80s was just, I was a kid in the 80s, so I seen a lot of that stuff. It's like my older brothers and stuff. It just like, you know, how, you know, women with the big hair, like Madonna, I got to throw her in there, for example. I mean, look what Madonna did during the 80s, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a virgin, truth or dare. I mean, you look at Prince, look at David Bowie. I mean, I remember seeing David Bowie in Labyrinth for the first time and thinking, my God, that man is beautiful. Beautiful. And, you know, it's the androgyny, the gender bending, it just gave so much more flexibility for people to figure out what is sexy for me, what is sexy in general.
Oh yeah, especially if you look at the new wave, the new wave trend that hit the 80s there, especially like with the women, you know, cutting their hair short, looking more like men, like for example, like the Rhythmics. I mean, you know, that style there, it's just a new wave style. And then of course you had like the 80s hard rock, the hair bands with the, you know, the big hair and how much, you know, all that hairspray, man. I would have been afraid to like light a cigarette next to a girl in the 80s there with the hairspray, their hair catch them on fire. You know.
And it's funny because a lot of people, like, I don't know if you remember, I think it was about a year or so ago that Harry Styles came out on the cover of a magazine wearing a dress. And it exploded into this whole conversation about how the fabric of society is going to unravel and we are going to be at the mercy of communists and we're all going to be speaking Chinese within 3 years or something like that. Because a man decided to wear a dress on the cover of a fashion magazine. And I'm like, that's happened before. That's happened many, many times before. And so these themes keep emerging of anytime someone challenges the status quo of what is expected in our society, all of a sudden there's this brouhaha of woe is our generation, where are our values going? And it's really not that bad.
It's not. Like you said with the dress. Kurt Cobain. Nirvana, one of my favorite bands in the 90s, growing up in the 90s. He wore a dress on stage during concerts. He showed up at Headbangers Ball in a dress, you know. And come on, you know, it's funny how something from the, like, you know, from the past comes out now and it's like, oh no, that's, you know, like you said there, and it's like, nah, I've seen that before. That's nothing new. And it's like, you have?
Yeah, it's the pearl clutching. It's the like, oh, we need to be careful because now these other individuals are starting to come after your values. And then that's when people really start to get marginalized and targeted. And, you know, how can you have a cohesive understanding relationship with your fellow human being if you're looking at them like they're broken?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. One of the things I want to go jump back onto, talking about what happened last year, talking about Pornhub. Pornhub gave a free, like, they gave their, like, content that you had to pay for on there. They gave it out free to everyone during the pandemic last year, I guess just to help people, you know, who's at home, just to get through, you know, the times. And
wonderful.
I don't know if you heard anything about that because, I was reading, I read a lot of different things. And that was one thing I read there. I was like, really? I was talking with friends about it too. I was like, I wonder how many times people that I might have known or, like, you know, visit Pornhub probably like 3 or 4 or 5 times a day because last year, and with the content they're like, you have to pay for it. They're like, oh yeah, it's free, you know, during this time. And I noticed like OnlyFans, OnlyFans shot up big time because I know a lot of people got furloughed or lost their jobs last year, and as a source of income, they turn to OnlyFans to put content out there and to, you know, support themselves. And I didn't know if what you think or your about that right there with like what Pornhub was doing last year and OnlyFans.
I would have argued that Pornhub there, that whatever it is that they chose to do during that time was probably directly related to the increase in OnlyFans, or what is it, ChatterBait, or what are the other ones? There's so many now, right? And so, like, the market is now getting flooded with individuals who are like, oh, I can actually just stay at home. I can stage my bedroom. I can do a little flirting and, you know, wink and, you know, kind of let my slip fall off my shoulder and get people and entice people to come back and spend more money. Like, because the sex market out there is so big. It's huge. It's a huge pie. And you get people who are on OnlyFans and they seem a lot more real than the individuals who are on Pornhub or Xhamster or RedTube or any of those mainstream kind of porn providers. Mm-hmm. And you also have the opportunity to interact with them as well. You can send individual messages. You can send them little gifts and they'll talk to you. And I feel like there was definitely room for growth in that area, and the pandemic blew that wide open. I thought the expansion of OnlyFans was fantastic because it now put a lot of people in a position to realize, okay, I can see maybe why people do this. And it doesn't always have to be out of desperation, because I feel like a lot of people started it and then realized, oh, I can continue doing this and it's okay. Like, I'm not a bad person. I'm not deficient. I'm not being taken advantage of by the male-dominated porn industry. And so I think it gives people a lot more ownership and autonomy in places like OnlyFans to be able to say when, how much, and, you know, to what point.
Right. I've read articles where, teachers, people who worked in the medical field, quit their jobs because the amount of income they were making on like OnlyFans, and it just blew my mind. I said to myself, and I've reading about this stuff, I was like, I think I'm in the wrong line of work. But I was like, I joked with my wife about it, and she looked at me, she's like, really? I was like, yeah. And she just gave me that look, and I said, and she looked at me again, and she's like, you're just trying to get a reaction out of me. I said, yeah, I am, honey. And it blows my mind when I read about that stuff there. It's like, yeah, last year it blew it open there because people spending more time online than they ever have before. And also with TikTok, That has like gone like big time since last year with a lot of people spending more time on TikTok, and it disturbs me because when I have friends that send me TikTok videos, Michelle, and when you click, you know, I'll click on the video and it's something, you know, like funny or ridiculous, and I'm laughing at it and stuff, and then, you know, you see over here it's like, what's this? And you start clicking and then you start going down that rabbit hole and you're like, oh shit. It's like, are these kids of age to be on here to be shaking their ass like that? And it's like, I jump off. I'm like, man, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see a 16-year-old on there shaking her ass. You know, it just disturbs me.
Yeah, the algorithm can be very assumptive. It makes a lot of assumptions about, I was like, okay, well, this person saw this video, they might like this video, and they're way off base, and it takes a long time for the algorithm to really learn you. My issue with TikTok is actually not related to that content. I think TikTok was definitely something that was needed for people to entertain them and give them something to do and be creative during the pandemic. But what's ended up happening is that a lot of people have gone on to TikTok and other social media platforms like Instagram, and they've really started to paint themselves as authorities in certain areas where they have no business presenting themselves as authorities in that area. So you have people who are like, I don't know, they're nurses, but they're talking about mental health, or they are they're carpenters and they're talking about, you know, how to be a sexual person. And it, and I'm not saying that people aren't allowed to give advice based off their own experience, but when they start to say like, this is what will work for you, I'm like, whoa there. Whoa. Like, let's stay in our lanes, everybody. Let's just stay in our lanes. And so I've found myself shying away from TikTok for that reason.
Right. I know if my daughter, if she was 16, I'd be like, you're not putting that app on your phone.
You're not the only parent that said that. But it's they actually, I forget which one. There was a research student on there that said, I wanted to basically time how long it would take from liking one video to getting to something that was completely against my value system. And so I think they had mentioned something. They liked something that was pro-conservative. And within 3 to 4 hours, they had reached some really anti-Semitic content because they kept swiping through the algorithm and watching the videos that were being recommended. So it can, like you said, you called it a rabbit hole, and I don't think you're wrong in that, because it really does take people. It's a very, what is the word? Subtle.
Yeah. Subtle.
It's a very subtle shift, and it makes this chain connection that it sounds very natural, but ultimately it's not. It can sometimes it's engineered, really, to get people to a certain place. So I always caution people when it comes to social media.
Yeah. I use social media as a networking to, you know, connect with other people, share their content and put that out there. But it's just, I couldn't post like on my, I have an Instagram for my podcast when I haven't like messed around with it in the last year. So I figured I would go ahead and, you know, start at least posting stuff here and there when I have new content coming out. And I did a live stream last night, and I put out the day before a post on there, and which is cool, as I found out you can post stuff up on Instagram on a PC now, that you don't have to be on your phone, which I was like, this is cool. So I pulled up the poster, the advertisement, and I copied and pasted everything like I did with hashtags and stuff, and I got like 4 likes out of it. I said to myself, that's pretty good for not doing anything for about a year.
I'm actually impressed. I can't solve the social media ills of our day and time, because if you want to be successful, you have to network. And how do people network? Through social media. And but doing so ethically and being able to stay true to yourself, as opposed to chasing the likes and chasing the follows, I feel like that's the piece that you have to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll get on Instagram and I'll go down that rabbit hole, because it's just, there's so much stuff going on there. I follow on Instagram like almost everybody and anybody, and it's like people that I've seen, they have an Instagram account, like from actors and actresses to people I know that podcast, and it just, you go to recommendations or similar and you start going down that thing and it's like, wow, it's like, you know, once in a while, it's like I have to pull myself back. It's like, wow, it's like I'm spending too much time on this, looking at this. It's like, because it's like you see so many interesting people and you come across stuff. You're like, you know, it's just, yeah, it's crazy, man, how things are with social media. But I mean, it's good to network with people, but it's nothing like it was back when I remember back in the AOL days, man, the chat rooms. That's one thing I thought was interesting back in the day. I wish we still had was chat rooms. I don't know if we still do or not, but there were some interesting, you met some interesting people and conversations and stuff. That's what I like, is conversation part of meeting people. They hitting you up directly and you're like, hey, how's it going? It's like, you're male, female. It's like male, 22, live in Florida. How you doing?
ASL question mark?
Yeah. I missed that because it was interesting, because I as soon as I would jump on AOL, they would all, like, your screen would pop up like a bad pop-up, you know? Pop-up, you need pop-up blocker, because you get message. People's like, hey, how's it going? It's like, what are you doing? It's like, you going in the room, the chat? It's like, yeah, you know, want to play some games? Just, I missed that, because to me, that was like a fun part of my life there growing up, because it was like the internet was still coming out of, like, you know, being new at that time, coming out from the late 90s, early 2000s. And I missed those times. They were great times.
Simpler times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, in the most recent episode that I posted, I actually talk about erotica and how, you know, before the internet, you had to consume the erotica that was published by, you know, like Nora Roberts and Diana Gabaldon and all of these other mainstream erotica writers. But now that we have the internet, the world is your oyster. You can find anything you want on the internet. And back in the day when you had Angel Fire and Blogspot and, you know, you could make your own website fairly easily. You could do whatever you wanted. you could put whatever you wanted on the internet. It's not the same, I think, these days. But mm-hmm. You know, back then it was just simpler, I think, like you were mentioning.
It was a lot simpler. It definitely was. Like, what was it? I remember I was about 17, 18. My adult entertainment came from a friend of mine. I remember it was my senior year in high school. That's when the Tommy Lee and Pam Anderson video hit. He got a copy. Yeah, he got a copy. He's like, dude, you got to see this. It's like, okay. So we went over. It's like we were watching a movie. It's like, got the soda? No, got beer. It's like, okay, got popcorn. Okay. It's like, so we sat there and we threw it in the tape and we turned it on and we were sitting there watching in the VCR. And all of a sudden, it's like, I'd never forget my friend. We're watching it. And when they showed Tommy Lee, he looked over at me. He said, same exact words. He said, God damn, I'm jealous of Tommy Lee. I said, why, dude? He said, he has a bigger fucking dick than I do.
I'll be honest. I've always heard that, and I've never actually seen that particular video.
Yeah. It was, I mean, we were like, I could give you the shorthand version of it. Mostly just, you seen Tommy, you know, swinging his junk around. From what I can remember, it's been forever since I've seen that video. He's swinging his junk around. You see some good shots of Pam. There's one that I laugh every time when I think about it. is Tommy Lee driving down the road and Pamela Anderson's giving him a blowjob while he's going down the road. It's like, how can you control yourself when that's happening behind a motor vehicle? It's like, I'm afraid like an accident would happen, you know?
Practice makes perfect. But also, everyone, stay safe. Don't drive your vehicle if you're going to be distracted, if you're getting a blowjob at the same time. Don't want to put people in dangerous situations.
Yeah, that scares me. You know, try explaining that to the officer. It's like, what happened here? Nothing. I looked down and I lost control of my vehicle. It's like, well, what was actually happening? It's like, why does your girlfriend have blood on her mouth?
I don't even remember. There's that was one of my favorite scenes from the movie Parenthood with Steve Martin. There's a scene like that where, you know, he gets into a situation. His wife is trying to be adventurous, and she does go down on him while he's driving. But then there's an accident, and the police officer asks, you know, like, what was going on, and he just turns to his wife and says, "Show him, honey."
I remember that. That was such a great scene there. That was funny. I remember that. But yeah, I remember that stuff there. And what was crazy, one memory I have, my dad, my stepmom gave him for a whole year, 1994, she paid for a whole year subscription to Playboy. So my dad, he would get those subscriptions in, and he'd get it first there, and then all of a sudden he'd be like, "Hey son," he's like, "I got the new issue." So I'd get it, and then I'd take it, and like I tell my friends, like, "Oh," so friends would come over and be like, my dad walk in and be like, "Got the new issue," and we're like, "Oh, no way!" It's like we'd like. As soon as we get that issue, the first thing we did was flip open look at the centerfold poster of who it was during the month and stuff, you know? And it just, those were some great times, man. Some great memories, because it's just like, I feel like like the generation nowadays, they're missing out on that stuff because it was just so neat. And especially Showtime, Cinemax late at night on the weekends. I know we all, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I was talking to my fiance about that the other day, and we were talking about Red Shoe Diaries and
yes,
Shannon Tweed and all the softcore kind of pornography that was on there, and HBO, Dream On. Like, I mean, I distinctly have a memory when I was on vacation with my family. I must have been like 9 or 10 years old. And I remember turning on the TV, and it was on HBO, and there was a very clear image of a woman's breasts on the TV, and my mother snatched that remote out of my hand so fast, and it was like, why? What was wrong with that? And after that, I used to try to watch scrambled porn.
Who hasn't?
Boy variety, like trying to make out stuff. I'm like, why is this so taboo? I want more. Got the, like you, I used to sneak and see my stepdad's Playboy, Hustler, Penthouse. Like, I was so invested. I could not get enough of it. And I know how corny it sounds. I loved the articles too. You know, Penthouse Forum. I mean, like, I agree with you. There was a quality to sex that I think is different than it is now.
It is. It's a lot different now than what it was back then and stuff. Yeah, the scramble porn, I remember that, you know, watching the adult, you know, trying to watch, you know, see what was, you know, getting scrambled on there. And then sometimes it's like you'd have the friend who have the antenna that actually could, like, get it in kind of clear just on the antenna. And it's like, mm-hmm. Yes! It's like, oh, I saw a boob! It's like, no! You know, just like that. And it's just, I just miss those times, man. And I yeah, Shannon Tween. Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of her stuff there growing up there, and that was just, yeah, she was something. I do have to say this. I had two crushes in the 90s. I had a crush on Winona Ryder and Drew Barrymore. They were my two crushes. yeah, they were. I just, there was something about both of them, man, you know? What was your two crushes when you were growing up?
Oh, goodness. I don't think I was alone when I say Alec Baldwin. Definitely with like the dark black hair and those piercing blue eyes. And Val Kilmer.
Nice.
Both, yeah, great. Those were my top two, I think, consistently during the 90s.
Nice. Yeah, they're Winona Ryder and Drew Barrymore were I don't know what it was. I saw Reality Bites and I just like was like, oh, Winona Ryder. It's just like I wanna date a girl just like that. You know? And it's like I want to date a girl like Winona Ryder, but then I want to have an intimate relationship with a girl like Drew Barrymore. that's how I was.
They were sweet. They were really sweet individuals and great characters all around. I think they really played the girl next door. I think Drew Barrymore definitely played the girl next door really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. And then at one point there was Alicia Silverstone. I remember when Crush came out, and I remember it was, I think, right before high school, right there at the end of middle school. People were just talking about that, like Alicia Silverstone. And Clueless, I was just like, wow, she was cute too. It just, she was great.
Yeah, and I think that's when I do talk about sex and sexuality, that's why I bring up movies and books so much, because I think it really helped flesh out what we were attracted to, like what we saw visually, even if it wasn't meant to be sexually explicit. I think it still generated a lot of a reaction of like, oh, that's what I'm drawn to. I'm drawn to men in suits with their hair slicked back, with strong jawlines, who attract femme fatales and who are intelligent and kind of crafty. And I don't think I've really strayed from that formula since.
Right. Pretty much for me was long, dark hair with nice lips and blue eyes like me, and that's my wife.
But it works. We pursue, we desire that which we see, you know, that, and so eventually when somebody crosses your path who reminds you of that, you work a little harder to make it a thing.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely agree. Well, Michelle, we're pretty much at the end of our conversation here. This has been great. This has been fun, man. I'd definitely love to get you back on again in the future to, you know, discuss more about different things. I may have you come back on. I may have like a whole discussion on one topic, you know?
I appreciate that. I look forward to it. This was fun. I agree. So thank you for having me. I look forward to the next topic.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you so much. And before we go, I do want to ask, what should people look forward to in 2022 with the Mindful Sexuality podcast? And where can people find you on social media?
Unfortunately, you can find me on social media as much as I was really kind of shit talking social media earlier. I am on Instagram, mindful_sexuality. I'm on Twitter, mindfulsexfl, I believe is my Twitter handle. And I'm also on TikTok. And I think all of the links to these social media accounts is available on my website, www.mindfulsexualityfl.com.
All right. And what can we expect out of 2022 from you with your podcast?
Well, I know for sure the next episode is going to be about seduction. It's going to be talking about the ethics of seduction, especially in the aftermath of the whole Me Too movement. A lot of these discussions about manipulation and, you know, whether or not it's such a bad or good thing in our relationships these days. And then basically really trying to have a lot of those harder conversations moving forward. I'm definitely going to be talking about porn in the future, going to be talking about polyamory, you know, just various approaches to actually having sex. And, you know, what that means for mental health all around and for the well-being of our relationships.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Can't wait to have you come back on to the podcast again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Everett, and I look forward to the next one.
Keep up with the latest shows and content from Podcast City Network over on podcastcity.net. Follow them on facebook.com/podcastcitynetwork, Twitter @podcastcitynet. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, Podcast City Network, and on Twitch, Podcast City Network. Podcast City Network, your top source for independent podcasting. Be creative, be yourself. Whether it's a sticker for your car, a t-shirt for that special someone, or a neck garter to keep safe during COVID-19, Podcast City Network has you covered. Grab the latest PCN gear today at podcastcity.net/shop to show your support for your favorite show or shows from Podcast City Network today. Want to start a podcast trying to grow your current show? Podcast City Network is here to help. We currently offer services for social media advertising, marketing, live stream hosting, custom logo design and branding, transcript services, custom intro and outro videos, audio video editing, press kits, one-on-one consultants, and much more. So don't wait. Contact us today. podcastcity.net/services. Head over to the website, fill out the form, get in contact with Podcast City Network. Have you ever wanted to start a podcast but didn't know how? Do you already have a podcast but you don't know how to grow it? Are you trying to find ways to make your podcast profitable? You can learn how to do it here at Podcast City Network. We offer consultant services, tutorial classes to help with learning to better expand your knowledge to grow your show. We also give access to our network of shows to help with cross promotions, guests, and overall reach while becoming a part of our ever-expanding PCN community based on people helping people. The best part is no membership fee. So what are you waiting for? Fill out the contact form below right here over on podcastcity.net/join now and sign up today. Podcast City Network, your top source for independent podcasting. Be creative, be yourself. When I want to kick back a few cold ones with my friends, I head over to City Limits Tap Room. City Limits Tap Room has a wide selection of TVs to watch your favorite sports, indoor and outdoor seating, and they are pet friendly. City Limits Tap Room also has food made fresh to order, and the grilled cheese is excellent. I recommend the grilled cheese and the apple pie cider with fries on the side. You can't go wrong with that, baby. For more information for upcoming events, head over to facebook.com/citylimitstaproom.
Thank you, Michelle Lopez, for coming on to the podcast. That was a great conversation, wasn't it? Again, you can find more of Michelle Lopez over on her website, MindfulSexualityFL.com. You can head over to the website there. Again, follow her on Twitter @MindfulSexFL. And her podcast, the Mindful Sexuality Podcast. Be sure to head over to MindfulSexuality.podbeam.com to get the latest episodes of
the Mindful Sexuality Podcast from Michelle Lopez. And of course, you can download the audio portion of this podcast over on of the Everett Lee Show over on Amazon Music, Podbeam, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and on iTunes. And follow me on social media over on Facebook, Everett Lee Show, Twitter at the Everett Lore Score Lee, Instagram, Everett Lee, and over on my YouTube channel, which I'm rebuilding, trying to structure it, add more content to it, Everett Lee over on YouTube. And we can't forget Podcast City Network, your top source for independent podcasting. Be creative and be yourself. Head over to podcastcity.net. Check them out over on Facebook, Podcast City Network, Twitter, at Podcast City Net, and subscribe to their YouTube channel, Podcast City Network, for content on there as well. And that is it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and one quick shout out to my Canadian listeners over in Canada. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time for another new episode of The Everett Lee Show.